into item two, 2019 to 2021, operation, budget, and legislative proposals. This is a workshop and public input.
Good afternoon, Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioners, Director. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. And my name is Nate Pamplin. I'm the Policy Director with the Department and joined by
Commissioners, I'm Raquel Crozier, your Legislative Director.
So this afternoon, we're going to present to you a quick overview of what we're hearing about the overall context of the state budget. We'll then do a short reminder of the proviso that we had in our 2017 operating budget and walk through some of the process that we went through really this past year. We've been at it for probably 13 months now, planning for the 2019 session in response to the proviso. Then we'll go through our draft operating budget requests and then wrap up with our agency request legislation and a summary of some outreach that we've done since we last briefed you on these draft proposals at your June meeting. Looking at the overall state operating budget, more than half of the revenue comes from retail sales taxes, and more than half is invested in of the state general fund goes to K through 12 education. On this pie chart, you can see the different sources of revenue. This is a almost $44 billion budget. Half of it comes from retail sales tax. Almost 20% comes from the business and occupation tax, and the balance comes from property taxes and real estate excise taxes and other sources. The largest consumer of that budget is again K through 12 education, where and also human services make up another third or so of the budget. Want to point out that the natural resources agencies comprise essentially 1% of the overall operating budget, and that includes, of course, DNR, ecology, Department of Fish and Wildlife, parks, RCO, etc. So turning our focus now to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, it was really neat going through the proviso work this year and kind of going back to the basics and doing the zero-based budget analysis and looking at our overall mission, which is to conserve fish and wildlife and habitat and provide sustainable opportunity. Within our operating budget of about $440 million, a little over 20% is from the state general fund. A little over a quarter is from the state wildlife fund. The majority of that is where hunting and fishing license fees are deposited. Another quarter is from general fund federal, that's federal contracts. And then lastly, we have some local contracts and a series of other funding sources. Total, we have about 50 different fund sources comprising about with several hundred contracts and about 3,000 or so actual budget codes. So it's a very complicated budget to manage overall. A lot of times we hear from folks about saying and looking at WDFW that, you know, we should manage ourselves more like a business. And so I want to provide some business context of our agency's work and contributions. Looking at data from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA Fisheries on that economic impact, it sums to about $4.3 billion of economic activity associated with hunting and sport fishing, commercial fishing, and watchable wildlife. In 2017, the Department of Revenue did a report looking at the amount of general fund that's created from some of those activities, with a focus on the rec side, fishing, hunting, and other outdoor activities that we manage. And we bring in to the state coffers $334 million per biennium. But you look at the amount of general fund that's appropriated to the department, we're at $94 million. So certainly there are other funds that are used to provide those opportunities. But just looking at it solely at the lens of this of the state general fund, it's about a 350% return on the investment. And so I think that's a really important message for us to share with folks when they look at investing in WDFW. And it's also an important message when we think about folks that are proposing cuts, because you could cut a dollar and we could potentially lose $3.50 as well to the coffers as well. Just kind of the inverse of the positive side of that story. To set the stage for the budget situation that we're in, it's worth going back and looking at state general funds since about 2007, when the Great Recession hit just in 2008 or so. So we were previously at $110 million. We had two bienniums of pretty significant cuts. And then it slowly has come back, and this is a projected value here for 1921 when you back out some of the one-time provisos. Upon closer investigation, and you look at, well, some of this was one-time adds or one-time reductions, or in some cases the legislature took general fund and had to spend another account, whether it was aquatic lands enhancement account, or it was shifted to spending down reserves in the state wildlife account. So when you look at what's the resulting of the buying power that was lost over the past six or so biennia, it's about $25 million. So then you apply an inflation rate to that, it brings it up to about $32 or $33 million of buying power that we have not seen restored into the department. That number is going to, it's coincidental to the number that I'm going to explain is what our budget problem statement is, but it is the right size. It's not exact one-to-one cause and effect, but interesting nonetheless. Let's shift and look at how hunting and fishing license revenue hasn't kept pace with appropriations. So our last recreational license fee increase occurred in 2011. So you can see that bump here, and I'll point out that the y-axis is not set to zero here. But this line represents the expenditure authority. And what that is when the legislature provides us the permission or the authority to spend revenue, but the ability to generate that revenue isn't approved. And so that's where we see what we call the structural deficit. We're allowed to spend more money than what we're able to bring in. We've been able to make it thus far because we've been able to tap into account balances, and all of those solutions essentially evaporate when we look at projecting what lies ahead for 2019. In the 2017 legislative session, we had proposed to fill that structural deficit primarily through recreational license fees. The legislature did not approve those proposals. They did provide $10 million of general fund to essentially backfill some of those important activities, but we still had to balance the budget. Overall, it was a $27 million problem statement that we balanced last August or September. But with that $10 billion of general fund, there was some strings attached by way of a proviso. And the proviso directed the department to do three things. One was to consult with an outside firm to conduct a performance assessment. They also directed us to do a zero-based budget analysis. And finally, they directed us to write a long-term funding plan. So in other words, what does that mean? Find efficiencies and eliminate waste. Repurpose your funding to the highest priorities and cut lower priority work, and submit a plan to the legislature on how to stabilize funding. So I'll now go through each of those proviso components. The matrix report was due to the legislature this spring, but we actually ended up working to have that completed by January so that we'd have the benefit of the results of the report to inform some of the other products. So we contracted with Matrix Consulting last fall, and they evaluated three broad areas, including they lifted up the hood on our operating budget, they looked at our management structure and how we make decisions, and they looked at our administrative operations and compared ourselves to other sister natural resource agencies or other fish and wildlife agencies in the country. In general, Matrix concluded that we're employing many of the best practices in management and operations. We're doing a good job on strategic planning, that our organizational structure is based upon programs with a heightened focus on regional activities. And when they looked at our staffing levels for some of our central support services, that we were on par with where other agencies were at, that there wasn't a bloated level of investment in some of our administrative services. But they also, Matrix concluded that there was some other changes that we need to take to heart. And that includes, number one, that they recommended that the commission has a greater role of oversight and engagement with the department. They had acknowledged that there was some need for some minor organizational realignments. They encouraged us to do better on enhancing our outreach and education and be more transparent in our decision-making, and that we need to have a more of a performance-based culture. We need to have established performance metrics, publish those, and report on them. The other conclusion from the Matrix report was that they looked at our what we've been describing as the structural deficit, and they agreed with that conclusion that is, in fact, what's going on, and they recognize the need for a long-term funding plan. Turning to the second component of the proviso, which was to develop a zero-based budget. And what we had done is typically when we define our budget, we define it based on our six administrative programs. And here what we described is, let's look at this from an outcome-based. And so we ended up dividing kind of the agency's work and looking through RCWs and other requirements in case law. What is it, the kind of core results that we're responsible for, that we're charged with performing? And we divided it up into eight major activity areas. Each of those outcomes then has a series of strategies underneath it. That is the type of work and task that's done to accomplish that outcome. So regardless of program. So instead of talking about, well, let's talk about an enforcement activity. Well, enforcement activity is not a standalone item. What we're trying to do is we're trying to provide recreational fisheries. We're trying to provide commercial fisheries. We're trying to ensure there's public safety out there as folks are recreating in the woods. So it was in those types of descriptions that we then divided up the enforcement budget as just one example. In allocating the funding associated with each of those outcomes and strategies, we also took note of whether or not a fund source was flexible. And if you can imagine a spectrum of flexibility, so general fund state or the non-restricted portion of the state wildlife account is very flexible. It can be used for any activity under Title 77. That's our statutory code that has all the authorities for the agency. Moving down the list, there's, let's say, the grant, the federal grant Pittman-Robertson, which is an excise tax on firearms and ammunition. Well, you can use PR for both managing lands as well as managing hunting opportunities. And so there's an instance where a fund source can be used across at least two different outcomes. So that was, we considered, well, it's potentially flexible. We could use it to resolve our budget challenges, and it would be a fund source that we'd look at to see if there's lower priority work that we'd want to repurpose. And so further down the line, we get to some types of fund sources. For instance, a Section 6 contract for us to do vessel patrols for southern resident killer whales. In that instance, we can't repurpose the funding. We either say, yes, we'll do the work, or no, we won't. But the funding is contracted to just do that one activity. In the third part of the proviso, the legislature directed us to write a long-term funding plan. And to help us with this, the department established a budget and policy advisory group comprised of 20 individuals from hunting and fishing, conservation groups, the business sector, counties, ag and timber interests. If there was a, you know, if there's a service that the department works with and engages with, we tried to find a representative to reflect those values and participate in those discussions. Our long-term funding plan, working with the advisory group, they went through the same level of detail that I took the commission through this past year in the series of your 8 workshops. I think we had 5 or 6 meetings with the budget and policy advisory group going through that same material. The plan provides an overview of the department's mission and budget. It describes our funding challenges, and it makes some key recommendations. One is the department's mission is really important. It contributes to Washington's way of life, and we've been underfunded. And of the funding that we have a structural deficit of over $30 million. The report acknowledges that most funding should come from a broad-based funding source, such as the State General Fund, and that revenue from licenses and fees should supplement that broad-based approach. That report's due to the legislature on September 1st, and a copy of the draft is in your notebooks, and that will be one of the documents that I'd ask the commission to approve perhaps tomorrow when we look at adopting the other operating budget proposals. Also want to note that the Budget and Policy Advisory Group, a number of the members, as they've worked together, have indicated that they want to say this a little bit more passionately than what's written in the report. And so I anticipate that there's a number of folks that will be writing a letter to the legislature representing their own groups, not associated with the department, but signaling the importance of the department's mission and the desire to have the legislature fully fund the agency. Before we go through and looking at what's really kind of different about our budget development process for next biennium, I want to just summarize how we've done this in the past. Oftentimes, our budget, it is just an incremental approach. There isn't a thorough evaluation of existing programs or relative investments to priorities. Oftentimes, we'll see that in mid-February or so, when the legislature really rolls up their sleeves and start focusing on the budget, they'll ask us, well, what's the consequences if we don't get funding? Or what happens if we cut your agency by $10 million of general fund? Our response would typically be a scramble. We would, $10 million, if it's just general fund, okay, well, that's the one color of money that we would look at. We would proportionate we assign that cut to programs and say, okay, programs, what would you cut? Well, 50% of the general funds in the fish program. Okay, well, here's what a $5 million cut would look like there. And another $1.5 million would be in habitat program, and all the way down the line. So between not looking at any other fund source and just the program proportionate cuts, legislature will also look at, well, here's some other activities that we thought, why wouldn't you cut over here? And so some would accuse us of hiding the ball. That we were only showing areas of cuts just based on just that one color, that we weren't really looking at the amount of flexibility that we truly have as budget managers. So what's different this round? Well, we have the benefit of the organizational assessment. There's a third party that looked at our budget and said, yes, that structural deficit is real. And there wasn't any major negative findings. The department is being good stewards with the resources that are appropriated to it. There is also the zero-based budget analysis, where we looked at, again, potentially flexible fund sources. Well, we looked at all fund sources, but we also flagged potentially flexible fund sources to see, hey, is there an opportunity for us to repurpose funding to higher priorities? We did so by actually creating what we called the outcome leadership teams. For each of those outcomes, we had a series of staff represented from different programs that contribute to that outcome, get together and look at what are the highest priorities. What is it that you do that contributes to that result? And thus, we were able to build what I'm calling our true carry forward level budget. If the legislature doesn't approve any of our requests, this is the budget that we would be implementing on July 1st of 2019. So it puts some of the decisions on the legislature on saying, are these services that you'd like for us to perform or not? But we know how we would make the reductions otherwise. We had the benefit of the Budget and Policy Advisory Group, and we've got the analysis written up in a long-term funding plan. So So looking at our problem statement for 2019, it sums to $33 million. The first three rows here are essentially where we have, that's essentially the structural deficit of funding that either expires, such as the one-time $10 million investment of general fund. The Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement is set to expire at the end of this fiscal year. And then we anticipate almost $5 million just in inflation. So bringing the total to $33 million problem statement. When we looked at how to live within our means and look at, well, what would need to be cut, we looked at the agency mission and mandate. We went through the zero-based budget analysis. And essentially, we created three categories. One was, is there some permanent reductions that we take now to try to reduce the size of the footprint going forward? Or are there activities that we'd want to write up and submit as decision packages? That's the formal title of a budget proposal that we'd submit to the governor's office. And then finally, is there new work that we think we need to do to fully meet our mission? Within the proviso, when the legislature directed us to look at our budget through a series of criteria, which we applied to our budget requests, as well as our executive management team got together and said, you know, let's also think about, as we're weighing cuts, what's the ultimate result to conservation? What's our ultimate result in terms of the long-term impact if we cut this one area? We set up criteria to actually prioritize species. So, for instance, we wanted to try to protect hatchery funding for hatcheries that are producing native federally listed fish versus hatcheries that might be, for instance, dealing with native non-listed fish. We also looked at our obligation priority. If there's a co-management nexus or a federal requirement for us to do that work, that was something that would be higher priority than for something that we could perhaps visit with you on that's in a policy or within a WAC that's directing us to do something. So looking at the first category of planned reductions for this fiscal year, we had proposed closing the Natchez hatchery and shifting that production to other facilities. We have proposed ceasing the triploid trout purchase and reducing a number of IT positions, as well as reducing some volunteer grant assistance and reducing fish pamphlet production for a total of $2.4 million. So again, that would be reductions that we would take to then eliminate that amount of a request for next biennium. So I'll want to spend a little bit of time here on some of our requests that we're proposing that you would approve go forward to the governor's office. First, we need to close out this current biennium, and so we would submit our second supplemental budget. We have actually two items in it for this round, a request for fire suppression. Right now it's at $700,000. It's still early in the fire season. That number is a best guesstimate, and we've already had 12 fires as of last Friday on our lands. The legislature does provide us a little over $450,000 per year in advance for fire suppression, but we're going to exceed that amount at least by $700,000, and it's likely to grow. Another, it's a fairly minor issue, but there is two accounts for commercial dive fisheries for sea urchin and sea cucumber. Those accounts have dealt with buying back licenses a couple biennia ago, and there's $3,000 that need to swap out to deal with the account management. Some administrative costs were pushed out to those programs, to those accounts this biennium, and so that needs to be addressed. We'll probably come back in 2020 with a review of a series of old accounts that just need to be taken off the books, and those would be two that would be on that list. So shifting to next biennium's operating budget, there's two categories here. There's the maintenance level, which is generally the more routine kind of cost of living type requests that we submit. And then there's the performance level, also kind of considered the policy level. Typically, it's for new work. For this year, we're in a unique spot because we have $30 million of reductions that we're asking to buy back. Those actually become policy performance level requests. So that's where I've divided them up into here's a category of maintaining current services, and then also there's the enhanced services, which represents new work. On the maintenance level requests, deeper in your packet, you can see there's a number of others that are included in that $6.7 million. I gave a couple examples of fish food and pilt. There's some IT projects that we received funding for this current biennium. We have to go through the Office of the Chief Information Officer to get approval for us to do the work. There's not going to be enough time for us to do the work, so we'll have to resubmit some of those requests for funding that we already received this biennium into next biennium, as well as hatchery utilities, salary costs for some of the staff that work our marking trailers, et cetera. So you can see in your notebooks some of the additional items that are included there. I do want to go through each of the deck packs for our policy level requests. We've identified $4.4 million requests for us to continue to have full capacity for wildlife conflict response. And we've identified a request for $2.5 million to maintain our enforcement presence on sanitary shellfish patrols. We have a request for $2.7 million of state general fund to maintain the work that we do on our 33 wildlife areas and 700 boat launch sites. This work is primarily associated with weed control. There's a forest health position and some work associated with real estate services. We've identified a request for $3.2 million of state wildlife account. That's that acronym WL-S, Wildlife State. This would go to maintaining our capacity to conduct game species research, manage harvest data, and continue to provide pheasant hunting opportunities and hunter education services. We have a package for just under $2 million of state wildlife account to maintain our customer service capacity. And we have a package for $3.5 million of state general fund to maintain the capacity we have for some of our conservation work. Some of the examples here are our species recovery efforts, some of our status assessments, being able to maintain work that we do for aquatic invasive species detection, treatment of noxious weeds, and retrieving derelict fishing gear. We have a request for $9 million of a combination of state general fund and wildlife state to be able to maintain fishing and hatchery production. You can see the number of hatcheries that are listed here. Most of those, again, we tried to identify hatcheries did not have salmon production. Most of these have trout production. There's some steelhead production that's impacted as well if we don't secure new funding. Really reducing our capacity to do warm water game fish surveys, to be able to conduct rehab on lakes and streams to prep for trout planting. We would need this funding to continue to comply with the ESA to allow us to have our early winter steelhead fishery, as well as be able to conduct bottom trawl surveys for rockfish. In another bill, you'll see that we're asking to make the Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement permanent, but that $3.3 million that it would generate funds three enforcement FTEs, and it actually funds, or it contributes to the funding of about 50 FTEs spread out throughout the Columbia River Basin. The sum total here is 10 FTEs of actual employees that would end up needing to be cut if this was not renewed. And then lastly, embedded in all of those decision packages is indirect funding, and just identified here because that's something that we'll often hear about as folks look at our proposals and say, hey, why aren't you cutting admin services? Well, we do cut admin services. It's in proportion to the areas of direct cuts. And so indirect is included in each of those. We work with our executive management team to identify what were some of the positions that would be cut. And you can see here that about $6.3 million would be cut in areas of IT, the wing of the director's office called the Policy and Public Engagement Work Unit, and some staffing in HR. So when we look at where's the new work that we've identified, we received $900,000 for this current biennium for regional fisheries enhancement groups. We're proposing to continue that investment next biennium, as well as we've identified a request of $12.9 million to enhance the agency's ability to achieve conservation. This funding would go to staffing that would partner with local governments to look at things like Shoreline Management Act or Growth Management Act issues. A real emphasis here on watershed health, and we would also look at investing in private lands technical support so we could work with landowners to try to improve habitat conditions on their parcels. For the past few years, we've really retreated from working on that urban wildland interface, and that's an area that's just becoming increasingly important as there's more and more encroachment into those areas, and there is some real conservation opportunities that we will lose if we're not staying engaged on that advancing front. We're also seeing a need to do additional work on our species of greatest conservation need. And the staffing here would be primarily focused on field staff deployed in the regions, but there is some statewide staffing capacity as well. We've identified a request for $4.2 million of state general fund to enhance our ability to do operations and maintenance on our lands. Over the past few years, we've acquired some new parcels that are essentially almost like the size of new wildlife areas. I think about the Big Bend Wildlife Area or the 4-0 wildlife area in Region 1. Right now, that funding is just being stretched by the existing wildlife area manager just including more land in their portfolio of work. So this would be essentially creating some units, some staffing to actually manage those new units. We also have a need. We have just one rangeland ecologist right now that's managing, works with our wildlife area managers to manage grazing leases. This would increase their capacity, add another FTE to do that work. And this would also improve our ability to do weed control and add another enforcement officer in each region with an emphasis on lands. We've identified an enhancement for fishing opportunities. It's a combination of State General Fund and Wildlife State at a little over $6 million. This funding would go towards hatchery production, monitoring, and ESA compliance, both in terms of what we need to do associated with the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan for Puget Sound fisheries, or work that we need to do with the new Mitchell Act biological opinion on some of our hatcheries down in the Lower Columbia. We would also look at increasing enforcement and maintaining our new Fish Washington mobile application. We have a request for almost $4 million to enhance hunting opportunities. The number one complaint that we hear from hunters is, where can I go? And so this funding would go towards those access programs as well as improving enforcement presence and add some staff capacity for our wildlife conflict response. So again, we have an earlier request of just maintaining those positions. This would then be some positions on top of that, in particular as wolves recolonize other areas of the state, or as we're seeing increasing conflict with elk damage or other encroachment issues, we're just getting more and more calls, and these staff have been just critical for us to have that landowner relationship, and it's a lot cheaper for us to send a biologist versus a commissioned enforcement officer. Similar to the other maintain requests that I reviewed, there's indirect included throughout each of these packages, and just wanted to highlight that what we're prioritizing if these are funded is really looking at some of the recommendations in the matrix report. we would like to be able to fund staffing that's increasing our focus on outreach, education, and marketing. We'd like to have some more training capacity and some more staffing in our HR work unit, as well as there's some business accounting software that would really help us. Right now, a lot of our fiscal software is separate from our contract software that's separate from our HR software. It'd be really nice to have those integrated into one unit. And then lastly, we have just a placeholder for Southern Resident Killer Whale recovery work. Certainly a lot of the other requests, whether it's the maintain our current services or the enhancement, has benefits to Chinook salmon recovery or killer whales. But we know that the governor's task force is currently meeting. They met earlier this week. They're going to be coming out with their report later this fall. So we just anticipate that they'll have some funding recommendations. What happens typically is the governor's office will then ask us to submit a decision package to implement those recommendations. So don't know what the dollar sign is, don't know what the exact level of work, but it'll probably be something along the flavor of increasing enforcement patrols, increasing hatchery production, dealing with fish passage, and doing outreach and education, and perhaps even addressing prey competition. So to roll up the series of requests on the performance level, we have $30.5 million of requests to maintain our current services. We've identified $28 million of enhancements. Combine those with the maintenance level requests. Again, those are the cost of living requests. We're asking your approval to submit requests for $65 million. And with that, I'll turn it over to Raquel to talk about the agency request legislation.
Oh. It makes sense to ask questions about this before we go into the agency request, because it's kind of switching topics a little bit. So I was wondering if might do that, to ask.
And if we have some suggested budget changes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Go into that. So, okay. So I've got some, but if
go
you
ahead, Kim.
In a couple of areas of your presentation, I'm aware that there are funding shifts. For example, the decrease in the ALEA grant for volunteers, and also the conflict specialists currently are funded mostly by PR. And so basically it's kind of shifting to general fund state. However, I understand the PR is expected to decrease and not fully support. But nonetheless, that is funding that exists and is being shifted elsewhere. So in the interest of transparency, it seems to me that it would be useful in discussing this, particularly with legislators, that's kind of explained. Where is that going? How is that? Because it's not totally a decrease then.
And Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioner Thorburn, that's a really good question. So in the case of conflict specialists, not only is it the PR is kind of stable right now or even potentially declining, there's also an issue of the contract interpretation of whether or not some of the conflict specialist work is eligible for federal funding. So there's that issue. On the broader sense of the fund shifts, this is in response to the legislative proviso, where they directed us to look at the activity, look at the color of money and the relative priority, and to shift. And so, for instance, for Pittman Robertson, one could argue, well, is it hunters or firearm enthusiasts that are buying firearms and ammunition? Is it their responsibility to pay for a staff person that's responding to a wolf conflict? So it was those kinds of items that we looked at and thought, you know what, that's a state general fund responsibility, and so let's direct the PR money to other higher priority work for that fund source and ask the legislature, say, hey, this is important work, but can we have general fund to do it? And so each of those have that kind of story. The challenge is with $30 million of requests, how do we have, when we have 5 minutes, 15 minutes with a legislator, how are we going to go through and explain that? So this is something we've worked very closely with the Office of Financial Management. We've been briefing legislative staff as well. The Budget and Policy Advisory Group has crawled with us through our budget to understand those items. But it is an area that I realize that, wait a second, what's going on here? So,
I have a second thought on transparency as well. In terms of the what you've called maintenance requests, you do convert a lot of that into FTEs. For the enhancement requests, you're not showing FTEs. FTEs tend to be a big deal in government funding, and I think it would be useful to put FTEs in the enhanced, again, in the interest of transparency, because that is actually adding staffing. And, you know, there are certain legislators that get pretty nervous about that, so.
For sure.
That's a Commissioner Thorburn, that's a great point. When we submit all of our budget packages, all of that is spelled out very clearly. And if there's any questions, I think I have some of that included. There's a document that follows the PowerPoint in your notebook that provides a little bit more detail of those requests, and some of it's included.
David, last question, then we'll get to Raquel.
Okay, and again, this is a budget item, and I wanted to formally move that we remove the Natchez. I think this is the appropriate place to do this, is to remove the Natchez hatchery from what was termed the efficiency list at the last meeting, so that it appears along with OMAC and the other hatcheries in that area of the budget, so that it will be part of the general ask and not part of the efficiency cut. And I'll just make that motion, look for a second, and we can explain it a little bit.
Second. Okay. Any discussion?
I should just mention that after our last cycle, last meeting, our Region 1 director told me he had a lot of conversations around this, was contacted by state legislatures, local community and civic representatives, even school district people that use the site as for educational purposes. Great deal of concern around that. This facility, it's estimated to return about $6.8 million to the local economy with fishing activity in the local area that's provided by the trout that are produced there. And I want to remind everyone that this serves our bread and butter license holders. These are the people that pay the bills for us. And also, those are the families that camp and visit these local lakes, and that also, that's an important source of recruitment for us, are these local trout fisheries. This is where families are introduced. And I think that it's important that we point this out to the legislature, as that we have another big list of, a longer now list of hatcheries that are in jeopardy, and I think the legislature should take note of the importance of these that have gotten so much attention, and what that would mean in their local districts if they were in jeopardy too. So that's what I have to say.
We have a motion and a second. Commissioner Thorburn.
I'd like to speak to the motion. I'm going to support this motion and just add to the comments that Commissioner Grayville made, that one of the concerns, I think, with that was put forward in terms of putting the Natchez hatchery on the list was a need for considerable maintenance. In talking to regional staff, there's a feeling that it operates well and that the need for this maintenance is not urgent, that it can continue operations as is, and it's really kind of a low cost. It only has two employees as opposed to many of our hatcheries that employ four individuals. So in that sense, it's a fairly low cost operation. So I'm going to support the motion, as I said.
Mr. Graybill.
Another item, because this just came up on Tuesday at the meeting in Wenatchee with the governor's task force on the Orca Whale project. I met with Paul Ward, who is the fish manager for the Yakima tribe, has expressed an interest in partnering with the Natchez hatchery people and the department. They have an interest in expanding their reintroduction of summer run salmon to the Yakima River Basin. And so they want to start discussions where they can actually, they have a good funding source that would not only help maintain the facility, but expand it for their purposes. And so discussions on that will be initiated soon.
Mr. King, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I just support this also, and it's pretty amazing. You know, when we talked about the OMAC hatchery last time and took it off that bottom tier list and moved it up to fight another day, if we'd been thinking, we probably would have moved Natchez up as well. So it's just kind of in second afterthought that we do that, but not because people didn't notice. And I think that's important. You know, the legislators that I've talked with noticed, and they said, whoa. And I think that's part of this process, you know. These are the tough cuts that would have to be made if this request for funding for the overall budget doesn't happen. It's painful. So I think it's time to move that up and at least be considered with all the other hatcheries.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Well, I'm supportive of the motion. As you recall, in June, I spoke in this regard as well, but I'm a little confused about the process here. We got a briefing on this in June, and this is very close to the same briefing that we had in June. We've had time to think about it since June, and I thought we were going to hear more about it and have some interchange of questions about all this, sleep on it, and then tomorrow was when we would talk about motions. I mean, the big question is approve it or not approve it. Approve parts of it, alter parts of it, or not. That's the challenge at the front table here on a policy level. Should we approve this or not? So, you know, on slide 23, which is planned reductions for this fiscal year, there's some other things on there besides the Natchez hatchery that, you know, I have a few questions about. Maybe some of those I might want to sleep on. On this particular motion, I was ready to support it in June, and I still am and would not object to it right now. But I'm still unclear as to whether or not, if this, which had previously been viewed as an efficiency matter, ought to go into the $30 million of at-risk along with some other hatcheries, or whether it should be even deeper protected by not even being in there and going into the base level. I got questions about zero-based budgeting, and I've got questions about what exactly is the status quo, how is that defined, and I got a variety of questions. So I'm appreciative of seeing this in June and appreciative of hearing more about it now and looking forward to a lot of questions. I was not expecting the motion this quick. Maybe this is ready for everybody to approve. And so I guess maybe I'll just, having said that little concern, ask again the maker of the motion whether this was to place this from the current placement where it would be a permanent, quote, permanent reduction into the at-risk category along with OMAC Hatchery, Chelan Hatchery, Hump Tulips Hatchery, and the rest, or was it somewhere deeper in the zero-based budget hierarchy and not be at risk? So that's a question to the maker of the motion, I guess.
That's a great question. And again, this is a complicated budget. I expect this to arrive on the same page, which is 27, of the budget proposal, and it is the at-risk. As it, I think that this, again, makes a statement about hatcheries in total, about the value, and the legislature needs to consider that hatchery cuts overall and what those represent. And so what I expected from this is to have this hatchery appear along with the Chelan, Omak, Meesburg, et cetera, hatcheries. Thanks for the clarification.
I guess my question of the commission is Commissioner McIsaac suggesting that we hold off on a variety of motions until tomorrow, because there'll be a significant need to review this and sleep on it and have coffee on it in the morning and then drill down on it. Are you, Commissioner Graybill, are you prepared to leave that motion on hold until tomorrow morning when we review?
Yes, that's just fine with me.
Is there any objection?
But if we have the opportunity to do this tomorrow, when the public is available to view this, I'm happy with that. And there are other items we need to discuss today that we can finalize tomorrow.
Agreed. Nate, make sense?
Yes, sir. So it's my understanding then the motion's withdrawn, and perhaps it'll be made again tomorrow.
Yeah,
correct. Okay. Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, the following questions are a little bit to help the understanding of the challenge that the commission has here, and that is to approve or not to approve. So, and let me start by complimenting the staff again for a lot of great work. A lot of this is very similar to the last time. We've had time to think about it, and we've heard more explanations here. I've got maybe about four or five questions on different slides. On slide 15, which is the zero-based budget, it wasn't clear the priorities. You spoke very accurately about all the different elements, the outcomes, and the rest of it, but in terms of a zero-based budget, is there one that we can see the $30 million that are developed at risk and the remaining parts of the budget that are not at risk? This little slide there has a lot of detail on it and sub-programs and the rest of it, but is there, when we have to turn in a zero-based budget to the legislature, will there be one that has the whole ranking of things from zero to the top?
Great. Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioner McIsaac, first I would apologize on presenting kind of the same material. The material hasn't changed drastically, and just for it is a standalone agenda item, so I can't assume that commissioners recalled everything that I presented in June, the public that might be watching, or it's on TBW, so this is a standalone agenda item. So we do replow a lot of the ground, and for that I apologize, but that's just the nature of the business here. The zero-based budget. So in essence, the $30 million that we identified here, $30.5 million, is what we considered the lower priority work. And we're asking, actually there was another $2.4 million worth of work that we've identified that we thought we could cease doing, or we found an efficiency because we could continue to provide the same service but save some money. And that's where the Natchez hatchery was. Yes, it was a closure of a hatchery, but we were proposing to shift the production to other facilities. That next level is the $30 million of the at-risk, where we thought this was lower priority work, but it was still important enough to ask the legislature to continue to fund it. So then what's above that? Well, in a zero-based budget, I talked about, we looked at flexibility of funding. Half of our funding is not flexible. About half of it we called as potentially flexible. Either it could be used for any of the outcome areas, or it could be just used for two or more. We do not have a one-to-n list of all the activities that the agencies does, but I can walk through some of the other choices that were right around the margin of here's the $30 million that we submitted, and here were some other areas that the outcome leadership teams had identified of work that would go away, but we ended up not pursuing it because we thought it was more important than some of the work that we're asking to buy back. And so some of those examples by outcome area, for acquiring and managing lands, we could have cut a number of our wildlife area staff or staff that manage our boat launch sites. We did not do that. We did not put cuts of enforcement on our on that do wildlife area patrols. On the fishing opportunities, there were a number of other there's a lot of hatcheries that are contract funding. There's a lot of hatcheries that have general fund or wildlife state. Many of those are salmon hatcheries. You don't see our big salmon hatchery production facilities on the list, nor some of our other big producers of trout hatcheries. For managing hunting opportunities, you don't see enforcement officers cut on that list. And you don't see any of our district fish biologists, district wildlife biologists, or district habitat biologists. You don't see staff that are dealing with hydraulic project approvals, and so on and so forth. So we can kind of, I can go through all the agency's activities. That's what's above the line. And so these were the inverse is just looking at what was the lowest priority.
On slide 19, you have a true carry forward budget level. So this question gets to the maintenance level or status quo. One way of thinking it is, well, with the $33 million or the $30 million or the $32.4 million, that gets us, if we got that, that would get us back to where we were last time.
Correct.
Or you could say that gets us back to what our spending power is way back in 07, 09. So that's kind of my question, a definitional thing of this $30 million and the cuts. If those did not happen, would that get us back to status quo for the previous biennium or status quo for 07-09? Or what should we have in our mind as a thinking definition of what gets us back to what status quo?
That's a great question, and Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioner McIsaac, I'll try to summarize those. So, the $30 million reduction has to do with when we back out and anticipate inflation, we see that when you look at the amount of base funding that moves forward from this biennium to next biennium, we're going to have $33 million of lower purchasing power. And so that's where we offered to make some efficiencies, and we're requesting almost $30 million to maintain that service. When I talked about the graph that talked about the lost buying power, those are resources we've never regained. And so it's a totally different set of $30 million. We have not, when folks will come up and talk to you about hatchery production, for instance, that we don't have, that's where those reductions had come from. When we look at some of our enforcement losses, that's where it happened. We look at wildlife program cuts, that's when we saw a massive hit in our capacity that we have not restored. This $30 million that we're talking about right now is just to continue the same level of services we're doing this biennium. And it does not go back in time and make up for the loss from 07-09.
Okay, so on slide 23, one could ask the question for Natchez Hatchery. If we want so much money to be able to do what we've done this biennium, Natchez Hatchery was operating in this year, why would we not ask for enough money for Natchez Hatchery and call it to maintain our current level of services? I look at habitat monitoring and restoration reductions, and I'm not clear on why that is also something that if we're our goal or our problem statement is to be able to do the same level of services as we did in this biennium, why that wouldn't be included. I can see, and we talked about efficiencies last time, I can see a reduction in the fish pamphlet production being an efficiency measure. We don't need to maintain that level of funding. I don't know how much money that is, but it seems like we're reducing things that gets into our definition of maintaining services that we're already doing in this biennium. So it's another little definition of what is our target again? Is it what we've been doing? It's not the same level of buying power or services of 09 or 07. It's what we're able to do this last, what we're doing in this current biennium.
Yes, I'm trying to just process what you've summarized. The way I look at this is these are, for instance, the restoration reduction. This is an FTE that's retiring this biennium. And when the program looked at the work that they're doing and would we replace it and would we submit it as a legislative request for ongoing investment going forward, and the answer was no, that we would take that funding and be able to reduce the amount of the ask for next biennium. And so it would be a permanent reduction that we are we're taking to try to reduce the amount that we're submitting to the legislature.
If I might add to, I mean, part of the mandate was for the department to look at efficiencies and come up with recommendations. So this is kind of where I think where the staff had said, okay, you know, and with the budget proviso committee, these are some of the things. This is in response to the legislative request. Now, we have kind of come up, and with respect to OMAC, we didn't agree with that as a commission, and that's our prerogative to do that. And also NACHES, too. Didn't think that that was a wise area to cut. So, I mean, that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I don't know if that helps or not, or further confuses things.
Good. And maybe just a quick orientation as well as, so the budget will have three components when you look at the governor's budget. It will have the carry forward level. It will have the maintenance level, which is at that $6.7 million, and it will have the performance level, which is for new work. Our new work is unique this time because it can include $30 million of new work in terms of the way the budget's structured, but it's work that has been approved in the past by the legislature.
And just as a follow-up to Commissioner Keogh's question, so on slide 23, in terms of the spirit of efficiencies, what is it about habitat monitoring and restoration reductions that are efficient? And what is it about ceasing triploid trout purchases as efficient?
Well,
as opposed to maintaining current services.
Yes, Commissioner, those are $2.4 million in reductions. So it says planned reductions for this year. Those are permanent reductions. The IT reduction was an efficiency, and we talked about this a little bit in June. You challenged on the word efficiency, so I struck that word because these aren't all necessarily efficiencies. Some of the work, as you pointed out, is just it's going to cease. We're going to stop buying triploid trout for planting. The IT positions we considered as an efficiency because we ended up, for some of the positions, they were regionally deployed and go out and help staff that are having IT problems in the field. We now have software that people can log in and remote in from Olympia to provide staff that assistance. So instead of having three people running around and checking on your computers, we can do it remotely. So that's what I would describe as an efficiency.
I just have one on this triploid trout piece. Did you get constituent input? Did you do a return on investment portfolio? Where did that come from? I mean, because it's been a pretty significant part of fishing opportunities and drivers for customers to get out. I assume we did something, but I don't know what it is. And you can answer it today or tomorrow, whatever you think, Nate.
I'll attempt to answer the question while it's fresh.
All right.
Thanks, Commissioner. On that one, it really had to do with, again, when you're comparing all the other hatcheries that we're trying to protect. And so do you want to do this, or do you want to keep another hatchery open, or do you want us to be able to buy triploid trout? As we weighed this as within a fish program, within the outcome leadership team, and the executive management team, we opted to keep a hatchery open and forego this. I agree. We often call the triploid trout, that's kind of the sizzle. That's when you're marketing the trout opener and you're saying, hey, we did this amount of planting and there's triploid trout in it. That's to try to generate a little bit of buzz about that fishery. We're cutting $30 million. And so that's where we're trying to identify things that we're still providing opportunity and trying to provide is the same level of opportunity in all the geography, but it won't have that particular component.
For another day, but there may be some private sector participation in this trip. We can talk later. Commissioner Thorburn, Commissioner Baker.
I just want to sort of raise the word priority and lower priority as a bit of a concern in terms of how this is being presented. And I'll take the conflict staff practically wiping out a program that is very important. It really is more about it was inappropriately funded. But I don't want to hear lower priority, particularly when we're talking about conflict staff. I think what I hope we can do in putting this forward is sell the value that is being lost rather than talk about priority very much.
Well, Commissioner Thorburn, I was trying to respond to Commissioner McIsaac's where he was asking for a one-to-end list of all the budget activities, and we don't have that. When you start looking doing these activities within an outcome, it's hard. When you start comparing across outcomes, what's more important, this salmon hatchery, this enforcement officer, this wildlife area? Nobody wants to cut any of it. And so you all are now grappling with the issues that we've been dealing with as an executive management team for biennia, and certainly really rolled up our sleeves this past year. I'll share with you in our discussions with the Budget and Policy Advisory Group, as I was going through these series of at-risk and buyback, they didn't spend a lot of time discussing it because they all felt like, ask for it. Of course you're going to ask for it. Those are all important. That's all important work.
Commissioner Baker, then Commissioner McIsaac.
I think that we are well aware of how much work has been done, and this and appreciate that. I know everyone on this panel has said that many times. This, I believe, and that the confusion that is still here, obviously, is that this is a different way of presenting a budget and a deficit budget, and it is, and so I want to take a stab at this. Just bear with me just for a second. Most agencies submit a carry forward and a maintenance level budget. Here's what we've done. Here's a little bit more that we need. And by the way, here's what we want to do. And those are the decision packages. And the governor sits around and thinks about it and puts together his budget. That's like a household, we're going to use a household analogy here. That's like a household saying, here's what it costs for my rent and my electricity and my food, and this is how much I need. And now I want a car, and that's a decision package. Should we get something new? What we're doing here, and it's confusing, is we're saying, this isn't my budget. This is how much money I make. I make $4,000. So, and I have, and my budget, what I do is $5,000. So I got a $1,000 deficit. We're answering in our $30 million ask the question that they will ask us in a normal circumstance, what are you going to cut if you don't get what you want? We're doing it in advance. But that's difficult for all of us to swallow. And what I've worried about and asked this question, I think, every time we've talked about it, is since this is different, since we're being honest and doing what we're calling a true carry-forward budget, I share the same concern that people here are saying, which is, no, we're saying that that stuff isn't as valuable as that stuff. And I want to make sure as we present this budget that that isn't the message that's given. The message that's given is, here's the best we can do given our resources, and you guys make the decisions. This is our choice, but maybe there's other ones. But I share the deprioritizing concern, and I'm also a bit worried because, as far as I know, no other agency's submitting budgets like this in this form. On the other hand, no other agency has been put through the workload that we have in the last year to justify ourselves. So I'm not sure how to fix that. I just want to make sure that we spend a lot of time with the governor's people and make it real clear what we're doing here. Then we get to the efficiencies, which aren't really efficiencies, they're cuts. And the question that I have on that, and I will end this little speech with a question. I don't have my own opinion about whether we should buy triploid trout or not. But if the reason we aren't is simply to prove that we can come up with some cuts, because we think it's an important political consideration, we want to show that we can come up with some cuts. $3 million in cuts on a $400 million budget really ain't much. Then I'd rather not do it. And so do we really think that we need to make these cuts? Obviously, the pushback we've gotten on the hatcheries, we're going to change those too. The balance, is it going to hurt us more than it's going to help us? That's my question.
Vice Chair Carpenter and Commissioner Baker, thanks for using the household analogy. The description of the $5,000 of expenses and $4,000 of income is the situation that we're in. This is not something that we brought on ourselves. If we didn't have the proviso, well, we were in this situation in 2017. We had a $25 million problem statement. It ballooned up to $27 million because the legislature added $2 million further of cuts. And so now there's an inflation component to that, so now we're at a little over $30 million. So if this isn't something that we've are unique, that we thought, well, let's do our budget differently. We're in the situation that's been handed to us. And further, I think your statement about the triploid trout and whether or not we purchase it, that it's fine. If we want to pursue that, then it becomes what color of money. And I think it would be challenging to submit that as a request for state general fund. So then it becomes as part of, well, let's do it as a fee. And we're already at a 12 to 15%. If I understand the motion that's going to be made tomorrow on moving the Natchez hatchery, that's going to cost $500,000 to maintain. Triploid trout purchased about $300,000. So now there's another. I'm sorry for the quick math here, but we're racking up to another $1 million of requests if that were to go forward, which then bumps it up. Instead of a 12 to 15% increase, we're now at a 13 to 16% increase. Start doing that with some of the others. Oh, let's, and all of a sudden it starts putting it on sports persons. And so those were the kinds of choices that we made in the draft packages, and certainly turning it over to you for decision, turn it over to the governor to see what the governor does in his budget, and then we'll see what the legislature does.
I understand that we were handed this problem. I think we could have had we chosen, and I'm glad we didn't, because this is honest and transparent. But we could have gone straight back and done and submitted our budget the way we have every other year with an explanation of the zero sum. So we could have done the exercise, taken the budget apart, then said, well, this is how much we need, and here's our maintenance and carry forward, and here's our additions. But we didn't do that, and I think that's good. The second thing I wanted to say is this is just a comment. I still am amazed at how complex this agency's budget is. It is intransparent. It's opaque. It's practically black to the normal person trying to look and see where the money comes from and where it's spent. We spend a ton of money just managing the budget. So I believe that we are very, very hung up on fees, sports fees, fishing fees, whatever fees, and that those, I understand that sports people would want to ensure that the money that they spend goes to the right activity. I don't necessarily agree with that. I also believe that we need to enhance our general fund budget much more than we currently do, because I believe that the activities of this agency, even the hunting and fishing, are all part of that perpetuate, manage our statute, and it benefits everyone in the state. So I want us, and I know you've heard this many, many times, it's important to me that as we look at these budgets, we also look at ways to improve our internal budgeting process and make it more transparent and maybe minimize some of that, the pressure that we get from different user groups to spend our money according to their whims, because what we do benefits everyone in this state. Thanks for the little platform.
Commissioner McIsaac and Commissioner Keeney.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I only have two more slides left, but if Commissioner Caney's on the same thought of Commissioner Baker's, I have one on that same continuum, and that is the policy judgment that if there is more costs on some of these cuts, then it means a greater the 12% to 15% that we'll be looking at for increases in licenses should go up. And I'm on the same wavelength that I don't think we should just presume that. The advisory body says there ought to be more general fund support. The excellent slide that's in here about the benefits to the state show there should be more general fund support. So whether it's cuts to habitat monitoring or even triploid trout or Natchez hatchery, I'm not going to be walking through the door as we move on through this that anything we add on ought to come out of more license fees. I'll be walking through the door that it all ought to come out of a request for more general fund. But I'll defer my next two questions if Commissioner Caney is on that same thought.
Commissioner Caney. I'm thinking the same. And I believe all the workshops we've been through have taken us to a point, along with the Budget Policy Advisory Group, to see the budget more clearly. And in past years, when we would go over and say, here's what you're going to lose if we don't give what we're asking for, they'd say, we don't want to hear it. You know, and so I think what you've done now, though, following their instructions of the proviso, is to say, this is the truth. This is, you can see it all, and if we want to have these programs in our state that support salmon, that support fishing, that support hunting, that support wildlife watching, you know, all the things that we say we want to do, this is the real number. And I think that's what this has all been about, because we've done this in the past. Every year we do something like this, and we don't get the money. And so I agree. This is a very, very well-documented, well-run request for appropriate general funds to run this agency. And I agree with it.
I just have one brief comment. One word that jumps out at me when we come out of this process with a final package, in order to reach out to our customers, you can pick and choose who they are. You know, we all know who they are. And that word, Mr. Director, is on slide 31 on near the bottom. It's marketing. I think it's incredibly crucial how we market this and why we put this out. And now let's move on and grow. That's very simple, but that's my view right now. So, Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. And these are the last two slides with questions, so there's relief coming at some point in your life. On slide number 31, enhanced fishing opportunities. So I'm thinking of this in terms of whether the average angler on the street or the average person going out on a charter boat or enhanced fishing opportunities would include commercial fishing and the rest. Is it going to enhance fishing? So I got maybe a two-part question. For hatchery production, how much of the 6.3 is that? And when you look at monitoring and ESA compliance, it seems like that's a conservation activity. You mentioned the Mitchell Act buyout, Puget Sound RMP. In other words, complying with ESA, that sounds like a conservation activity. And if someone asks, well, how much more fishing opportunity am I going to get out of ESA compliance beyond what I'm getting right now, it makes me think that's kind of conservation. So anyway, how much is the amount for hatchery production, and should ESA compliance be in the enhanced fishing category or the conservation category?
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioner McIsaac. The titles of these I see are really probably confusing, and so for that I apologize. As far as the enhanced fishing, this would be new work that's above current delivery. So if you're thinking necessarily it's enhancing because it's that many more days on the water, perhaps not. This is just representing new work. So it's an enhancement in terms of the work that we're able to do to meet new federal requirements. So we have a new biop on the Mitchell Act hatcheries, for instance, that we have to invest in. We have, with the Puget Sound Chinook Harvest Management Plan, and potential for more increased monitoring to make sure that we're staying within our take permit. It might be for the same level of fishery, but we're trying to tighten up the variance around those estimates. And so without, I mean, I can try to follow up tomorrow and talk to the fish program further. You also had a question about how much in this $6.3 million is associated with hatchery production. It's about $1 million of direct investment.
$1 million, okay. And the last question is on slide 32, the southern resident killer whale slide and the bullet increase hatchery production. So as we're wrestling with approving something to go forward as a budget request, this is kind of in a to-be-determined category. So we've indicated, well, the task force will do that. And so I'm trying to think about who on the task force will do that and which of our representatives on the task force are going to do that and how are they going to make the policy judgment of how to do that and how much to do and what about weighing the risk to wild fish and this and that. So we have our chairman, who's not here, is on the task force, and I think, well, he might want to hear what the rest of the commission might think. We've got department staff on the task force somewhere. But when it gets down to the question of, well, how many Chinook salmon should be put out there as a proposal, a budget proposal that lands at the legislators' welcome mat to fund sooner or later, how much should that be? Should we go bigger or should we go smaller? I've heard proposals that if we increase the prey base by 3 to 6%, that might be detectable. And I've heard 15% more prey might be something that could be measurable. And but in terms of being significant, that people feel very confident and comfortable that that would make a difference in the ability for killer whales to not be challenged with starvation, it could be a lot bigger. And so when you start talking about enhanced Chinook production, there's policy questions about where would it be, what stock would you use, and what's the relative risk to wild fish. There's been some good work on what genetic strains to use. But it seems that this is something that is a huge policy question and ought to be part of our discussion tomorrow. As opposed to relying on our representatives to go in the task force and put it on their shoulders as to say, well, the number should be 50 million. That's what the National Marine Fisheries Service wants, is 50 million more Chinook. That's the rumor we've heard anyway. Put it on their shoulders that it ought to be at the Kalama Hatchery or at the Beaver Creek Hatchery or at the Deschutes River Dead End Bay or here or there. So my long-winded question is, I've been thinking this is an appropriate discussion for the front table here tomorrow. Am I missing something?
No, sir. I think it would be a very appropriate conversation now or tomorrow. So, but yep.
Raquel, are you ready?
All right. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioners. Again, I'm Raquel Crozier. I'm your Legislative Director, and I'm really enthused about the energy in the room, hoping you guys have lots of questions and feedback for me, too, on our bills for next year. We've just got four bills that we're proposing we advance in the 2019 legislative session. Three of them will look pretty familiar. They're concepts we've had in the past. They've been in front of you before. And then the big one we need feedback on today is we've got some options for you around a potential license fee increase. So we're going to spend most of our time on that. But I'll run through each of them and stop and get your feedback on each. The first is one that's really focused on recruitment. This one will look familiar to you because we ran it last year, Senate Bill 6198 and House Bill 2505. They were really well received, but we had a huge volume of bills last year, and these just got caught up during cutoff. So hoping to run this again. It does four primary things. It allows the agency to have some additional authority to do bundled packages and discounts, so like multi-year licenses and family discounts. It also provides a $20 coupon for those that have made it through Hunter's Ed on their first hunting license. It aligns our youth ages. Right now we've got youth set at 15 for fishing and 16 for hunting, so it cleans that up. And it also expands our the other thing that will look familiar is the elimination of the requirement to have an annual license for the Lowland Lake opener. It does have one new concept this year, and that's expanding our Hunter Ed deferral program. So right now we require people that go through Hunter's Ed that want to use the deferral to skip Hunter's Ed to go with a hunter that has gone through Hunter's Ed and has had an active license for the last 3 years. That's been a challenge for getting new hunters out. Our Hunter Ed program sees a lot of people come in wanting to use a deferral and not knowing any hunters that have had an active license for the last three consecutive years. So we want to eliminate that three-year requirement. It'll help our mentorship programs that our wildlife program and our licensing program are working on. So good little bill. I have already started working on some potential legislative champions, and we've got a lot of great support on that. There is some upfront costs, probably about $300,000, we think, for the Hunter Ed coupon, but it'll come right back to us, right, if these discounts and promotions are successful. So hope to actually make money on that bill in the long term. The second bill is extending the Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead Endorsement Program. So the endorsement, for those that don't know, was established by the legislature in 2009. It was actually a great partnership between the agency and a bunch of Columbia River angling groups. They came, helped us pass it at the time, and it supports the $87 million fishing industry on the Columbia River. It put in place a fee of $8.75 for a Columbia River endorsement on your fishing license that you're required to have to fish for salmon or steelhead in the Columbia or any of its tribs. Well supported, back in 2017, we had it extended for 2 years, and it was really down to the wire. The bill actually got signed on June 30th at 11:45 at night, and it was pretty scary because the opener, for those of you, I know Commissioner Graybill knows this because he fishes the Columbia a lot, the opener is July 1st every year on the Columbia, and so we were worried we weren't going to be able to sell these on the opening day. So what we're recommending this year is removing the sunset altogether, making this a permanent program, and relying on a biennial report instead to the legislature that shows what we're spending the dollars on. We just met with the endorsement board yesterday, which is the group of citizen advisors that help us figure out where to spend those dollars, and they were super supportive of that idea, and they're going to be sending a letter to the commission here in the next week or so with their support for removing the sunset. It brings in $3.3 million a year, as you heard from Nate. Super important program, and that 3.3 goes towards projects monitoring, evaluation, enforcement, creel to support those fisheries on the Columbia. Sure.
If we raise that fee by a dollar or a dollar and a quarter, would we lose any participation?
great question, and I don't know the answer to that.
Because I know since the beginning, the cost of doing business has increased. I think that's clear. Just a thought.
Mr. Vice Chair, I think that in the rec fee bill, there's a proposal to increase fees by 12 to 15%. So that 15%, for instance, would be applied to this endorsement.
Okay. Thank you.
I also think our endorsement is a dollar cheaper than Oregon's.
Yeah.
So a little bit of a lift would actually just put us on par with Oregon.
Okay.
Any other questions on this one?
Oh, Joe Store, please.
Yeah, Mr. Vice Chair, it's hard to tell whether a dollar would do. I would just note, I just looked at the closeout for last fiscal year in terms of participation by hunters and fishers, and you know, the last couple of years we've been down in both, and it's a pretty tenuous kind of situation right now, I think, and the resistance is just hard to gauge.
Commissioner McIsaac.
The question has to do with the original purpose of the salmon and steelhead endorsement, and this is a question out of ignorance on my part. I've heard some things that this was to fund alternative gear studies for the new Columbia River policy, or it was to increase hatchery production, or it's this or that, and it's tied to the state of Oregon, and both states were committed to doing the same thing. So was there expectations when it first started that it was to be used for funding the Columbia River policy business? And if this were to go forward, are we asking for that same purpose, or would the money go into a general pot that we could use for anything?
So as I understand it, the purpose was back in 2008, 2009, we had some new requirements under ESA, and they cost the agency a fair amount more money to be able to prosecute those fisheries on the Columbia, and there was a risk of those fishing opportunities declining as a result. And so the angling groups got together and said, you know, we're willing to pay more to make sure that we continue to get this opportunity on the Columbia River. I'm not aware of it being formally connected to selective fishing, but commissioners that were here at the time of the Columbia River policy when it was originated might know better than me.
And just another question out of ignorance. It seems like ESA constraints aren't limited to the Columbia River. Puget Sound are pretty severe as well. Is there an endorsement for Puget Sound that's out there, or why the Columbia River then?
Thanks, Commissioner McIsaac. There is a Puget Sound enhancement that's built in. It was originally separate, and then it got built in as part of the base fishing license. And so there is a portion of your base fishing license that goes to a Puget Sound account. The Columbia River Salmon Steelhead endorsement goes into a separate account, and those funds are only eligible for activities, I believe, related to rec fishing opportunities on the Columbia.
It
was not linked to the timing necessarily of Oregon's or to the commission's policy.
The recreational community agreed to pay extra monies in the Puget Sound fishery for that to go to a dedicated fund, which was to increase hatchery production on blackmouth. But then that was rolled into the general fund piece, and it's sort of an innocuous account now that's, I guess we really don't know what's going on with it. It's just the money's being used somewhere, right?
Well, sir, I don't know exactly where it is as far as right now at this presentation, but we can summarize that and bring that back to you, because it is, I believe it, there is a separate account for it, so we can look at
that'd
it.
That'd be good, because there'll be a question from the public at some point.
And I can jump in and say that there is a separate account. There's also a separate advisory board for those funds that we have, and similar to the Columbia River endorsement, in that there's a group of, I think, 10 to 12 advisors that help figure out how to spend those dollars. And there's Commissioner Grable now. Anything you want to say on the endorsement? We were just going through the removal of the sunset. I know this one's important to you.
Yeah, that is important. I know that there's been concerns about that. that program provides the necessary funding, particularly in my region where most of our fisheries are determined by ESA. We don't even know if we're going to have a season unless we have the fish. So it's almost a last-minute opportunity. And so it's important that that fund stay in place to provide the funding. I just can't imagine it being workable that we realize we have enough fish to have a season on the Wenatchee River, as an example, but we don't have the funding to do the necessary enforcement and monitoring of that fishery. So it's extremely necessary we keep that funding in place. That's just an example of that. And
in a manner similar to the Puget Sound matter that the Vice Chairman spoke of, have you guys looked at the pros and cons of subsuming this endorsement into an elevated COLA approach so that, you know, a lot of times simplicity can be our friend and all the complexities and all the linkages become so difficult to keep track of or explain. But have you looked at the pros and cons of that?
No, Commissioner McIsaac, we haven't been looking at that, but that's something we can look into and bring back to the commission. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on. So the third bill we're looking at for next session is phase two of our ADA statute cleanups. As you'll recall, last year we worked with Representative Barkas to run a bill that really dealt with mostly rulemaking, condensing our rules, and also broadening the signature authority for our reduced rate and accommodation forms so that not just doctors but also physicians assistants and ARMPs could sign off on those forms. Phase two of that effort is what we're proposing for next year, which is to go ahead and get into the discounts we provide to disabled hunters and fishers and expand it. So we right now only provide the discount to disabled hunters and fishers that are in a wheelchair, are legally blind, are visually impaired, or are developmentally disabled. And we have a different discount rate for hunting and fishing licenses. So for fishing licenses, it's about an 82% off discount, and then for hunting licenses, they get the youth rate. So we want to clean that up, have a consistent percentage off, and also expand it so that we're providing it to anyone with a permanent disability that's been signed off by their doctor. We've been working with the ADA Advisory Committee on this. We sat down with them, brought them numbers on various different options of how to do this, because our goal was really to stay as close as we could to revenue neutral, knowing that we've got pretty significant budget challenges already. And if we're doubling the number of people that are going to qualify for the discount, there'd be some pretty significant revenue impacts. So they've suggested this 50% off. It's also consistent with what Parks does on their camping fees. It does, as we've been working with licensing, it does look like there's going to be about a $400,000 fiscal impact. We're trying to tweak some things to reduce that however we can. And we've been working with the prime sponsor of last year's bill to get his feedback as well. Any questions on that one? All right, hearing none, we're getting to the juicy stuff here. The license fee lift. So the Budget and Policy Advisory Group came up with a couple of different options for license fee revenue lifts here. They, again, I want to remind you that their value set was to have at least two-thirds of the budget challenge resolved with general fund, and then one-third be resolved through some mix of user fees, license fees, or some creative revenue source. So the two options that they suggested we advance to the commission were an across-the-board fee increase of somewhere around 12 to 15%. That percentage range was because they wanted it to be at or below inflation since the last fee increase. The last fee increase was in 2011. So CPI since 2011 has been 20%. We want to make sure it's well below that so we're not pricing people out. And then the second option they suggested we look at is a flat fee of $10, which would be applied to both hunting and fishing licenses. And there's some additional things they suggested we look at, a fee for not harvest reporting, eliminating the 2 and 3 day temporary licenses and relying on a 1 day only, doubling the cost of your second catch record card. So for people that are filling up their cards and coming back for another one, they're using more resources than most and should pay for that. And then they also suggested the commission look at trying to get fee setting authority just for those costs that are approved by the legislature. So things like cost of living adjustments, increased fish food maintenance level type requests. So just want to run you through kind of what those two options look like for some of our average customers. You can see here 12 to 15% across the board increase would be around $4 to $5 for an annual freshwater license holder. The surcharge is just $10 more. The 1 day combo fishing license is just a buck or $2 more at 12 to 15% increase, and $10 more or $3 more with the flat fee for the 1 day. And then the annual combo would be about $8 more if you did a across the board, and $10 for the surcharge. So that's fishing. Turning to some of our typical hunting licenses, it's about a $2 increase for the across the board on your small game. $6. Quick math here. And about $25 for those that get everything, right? Big game, small game, the combo license for hunting. And then if you did the surcharge, $10. So pretty significant difference there for hunters between the across the board and the flat $10 fee. So there's some pros and cons, I think, of each of those, right? We've got across the board is a pretty simple message. It tracks with inflation over time. It treats everybody equally. The person that just comes in and wants to get a razor clam license isn't getting priced out of that activity. And those that are using more resources, getting everything, are paying more. But I think it is going to get challenging with the hunting versus fishing license impact, since hunting is going to get a fair amount more of a fee increase under the across the board. The flat $10 fee treats everybody the same. So there's pros and cons of both. Also, some other things to think about just ledge strategy-wise. Across the board means we need to touch, all of our fees are set in statute. We need to open up the entire Title 7732, touch every single line. It's going to be about a 30-page bill. Versus the $10 surcharge, which could be one page, but it's a new product. So more challenging to, I think, message a new product for no new service. So some things to consider. And then the last slide here is just showing you what each option would bring in. The core fee for the core revenue for the across the board, 12% is 11.5, 15% 14.3, and 15.7 for the surcharge. You add those additional components I talked about, the getting rid of the 2 and 3 day licenses, the harvest reporting fees, et cetera, and that brings in another 1.6 for each one of those options. And then you add the Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead endorsement, which we hope will go through, another 3.3. And the loss for that Hunter Ed coupon of $300,000, and you see the totals there at the bottom. Any questions, Commissioner Keeney?
Where'd he go? Thank you. just a couple clarifications, and then a question. You said that the Budget Policy Advisory Group wanted 2/3 of increases to come from general. Of the 30 plus million, and this is 20 million, so isn't this overshooting it, or am I getting something wrong?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Where is this 52?
Yeah. So, a couple things. I think the
working with the Budget and Policy Advisory Group, it wasn't so much that there was I'd characterize it as a percentage, as much as it was a broader value to have the majority of the funding come from a broad-based fund source like State General Fund. So as we were pulling together the numbers and trying to look at, as well as looking at the activities and what did we think as an executive management team was most appropriate for the color of money, we were keeping that value in mind and trying to reduce what we parked as fees. And so that goes back to the earlier example and the dialogue between myself and Commissioner McIsaac about the hatchery and or triploid trout and which color of money is it. So we could, for instance, the commission could say don't pursue a fee bill and request all of it as general fund state. I think that would be a real challenge for us. I think the legislature would be looking to say, why aren't you adjusting fees to help solve the problem? But what's that relative percentage? So we looked at the investments. We tried to scrutinize and push it to general fund where we could. Those that we thought had a sports person nexus, we put as state wildlife account.
So under option two, if that was selected or advised, then would the ask for general fund be about $10 million? In the world you're going into,
that's
is this
a great
$20
million
making up 2/3 of the $30 million we're looking for?
Right. So what we're proposing here, if you look at for fees right now of the total part of the performance level request, it's these four numbers that are summed. So it sums to $20 million.
I'm sorry, I can't see your pointer.
I'm sorry. It's not showing up. Wow, look at that. It's the fees for where it says wildlife state, and then it says 11.4 for maintain and 5 million for enhance, and then the Columbia River salmon steelhead endorsement.
Yep.
Those four, 11.4, 5, 3.3, and 0.3, sum to 20 million. So that right now, as we've constructed our budget requests, we would need $20 million from fees.
Okay.
So we could push more of it onto general fund, and that goes back to the values the commissioners were sharing earlier.
Okay, and then another question was, did the Budget Policy Advisory Group have advice in terms of a $10 increase for all or a percentage?
It was really mixed, and we did not push it for a vote from the advisory group. At our last meeting on August 1st, there was a couple of the sports persons groups that were not in attendance, and so it felt like it didn't have the full representation of the people that would be buying these products to ask for kind of a call for the question. I also just want to point out, though, that as all of this comes together, it's an iterative process. And so that's where if the commissioners are adding another budget request, for instance, or taking one away or asking us to reduce one, the next question I'll have is, well, which color of money would you like it to be? Because then that affects the fee bill. And then on the fee bill, you know, if we could get away with only doing a 10% across the board increase, well, of course. If we could get away with doing a 5% or none, that would even be better. So we will, as I'm hearing what decisions, which levers you're wanting to pull, it's going to trigger pulling a couple others to see as it adjusts, and then we'll have a complete package that we can submit to the governor's office.
Okay, so I did have a comment.
Sense.
So from my standpoint, and I'm more of a hunter than a fisherman, but I don't think in my mind, and it's a tough decision, you don't want to create winners and losers in this, and that's sticking in my mind, that hunters would be more of a loser going with a 12 to 15% as opposed to just a $10. But, you know, it's all back to how many hunters there are in the state, what, 300,000 or... Not even that many.
Not even that many.
And how many fisher people there are, and that's 1.2 million, roughly. So there's danger there, too. You know, do you say there's a higher fee for this sport called hunting than what the fishing folks, just the people that just fish, are going to pay? Or do you say, hey, we need funds from all over just a surcharge of $10 per license? It's a tough one, but I think I'd lean that way just not to create winners and losers. But
and Commissioner Kenney, I would just offer that, you know, a small game hunter is going to be kind of on par with the combo fisherman that also is doing a Columbia River salmon steelhead endorsement and a Puget Sound crab endorsement. So I don't know if I would characterize it quite as winners and losers on this. It is, I think the big difference here is where the surcharge is. If you're a sports person that buys everything, if you're heavily invested, you can see that the surcharge only increases your cost from what you've done previously by 5% versus the across the board of 12 to 15.
And the 15% is considerably more than you paid last year for that same group, one that buys everything.
Yes.
Commissioner McCutcheon.
Do you have any research on what the costs of licenses are in the adjacent states? And when they elevated things, did they indeed have a drop-off? I know every state's different. There's different, ESA constraints and different, hunting opportunities. But how does all this compare to adjacent states? And when they raised, did they have a backlash?
Commissioner McIsaac, yes, we have and looked at that multiple times over the years and compared with states. In general, with the fee increase, you do see a decline in participation. We certainly saw that in 2011 with our data. Some of it, folks did come back. Part of it, it's always hard to tell cause and effect as well. When we had the fee increase, it also timed with the Great Recession. And so, how much discretionary income and how much folks were willing to spend on some of those activities, it's hard to tease apart.
And I'd also add the Budget and Policy Advisory Group's working on an appendix for their report that's going to compare some of the states. Mm-hmm. It came up at the Columbia River Salmon and Steelhead Endorsement Board meeting yesterday. They'd also like to see that, so we'll get that out to the commission when it's ready. Also know we are lower currently than Oregon, but Oregon went big and lifted their fees so high that they now are reconsidering whether they went too high. So we realize that there is a price elasticity issue that we want to make sure we stay below that point.
Thank you. I'd also like to bring up, it seemed like under Wild Futures we went through this, and I think we went in with, oh, this is going to be fine. We went out into the public and people agreed. They've products that they're paying for and it's a good thing. And then, it hit the fan when it really was an increase. And everybody got all upset, and legislators were involved. And how are we going to do this different this time? Because it's still an increase. And is the policy advisory group going to help to be out front and some of those other organizations out front? It seems like that would be something to be wise.
Commissioner Caney, I am concerned about that. I think that, number one, we look at the fee components here of these two components is about $15 million. Last time we went for a request of around $22 million, so the amount is different. Secondly, that slide that I called up said, well, what's different about how we built our budget this year? There was a lot of questions about how we're spending our money and where is the fee revenue going, and is the fee revenue going to an activity that why would elk hunting revenue go towards fisher recovery? Well, it's not. That we have we have federal grants, or we have our state wildlife grant, and we have a personalized license plate that's going to that activity. And that's an important conservation activity, but it's not being sponsored by elk hunters. And so I think that by going through, folks were worried about our admin costs are out of line. So that was the benefit of having the matrix report. So I think that there was a lot of other scrutiny about our budget that we've been trying to address. Further, we're demonstrating inflation is still occurring, and we're trying to stay well under what would have otherwise occurred if you just matched it to Consumer Price Index.
Track and preparing that information so that legislators understand that is one task. But that person at Walmart,
yeah,
buying a license and going like, what the heck?
Yeah.
What's our if Hosemiller was here, he'd be all over this. We've got to be, what's his favorite saying? I can't remember it now. But he'd be saying, we've got to have an outreach program that I mean, when they get their license, they get a slip that says, here's what happened. And your money, if you're buying a hunting license, is not paying for something it shouldn't pay for, and somehow convey that. And I think that's what the Budget Policy Advisory Group is hoping for, too, because otherwise people just see the increase and,
Yeah. And Commissioner Keeney, at the last Budget and Policy Advisory Group meeting, the group said, you know, we're happy to help you guys figure out the right groups that need to be contacted and get out to them. So they are getting out in front of this with us and are willing to be there and be the voice of the recreational user with those groups hand in hand with the department, which is great.
Commissioner Greenville.
Thank you, Commissioner Carpenter. You know, as much as we try, and again, this gets back to your concerns and Mr. Holtzmiller's concerns. Every year I hear, I'm tired of paying for my fishing license that goes into the general fund. That is a persistent perception. And we need to somehow fix that. You just talked about it, Nate, with the elk program. We had, as Commissioner Keeney mentioned, a clear message through Wild Futures about what the public wanted. But when we rolled out a fee package that would answer those needs, we got a huge pushback. And we also had seen, 2 weeks ago, the media treatment of the potential fee increases and what that stir it created. We're unfortunately in a period, primarily, across the board, with less opportunity, with the need for more funding. And I remember when we last went for our fee package, we had groups saying, we understand you need to raise fees. I mean, that just is a lot pure logic. But they finally opposed us on the fee package. So we have a big job ahead of us. I have to say, I am much happier now reviewing the budget and understanding the budget than any other time I've been on the commission. You guys have done a great job with that. I'm fully prepared to what we should expect from the legislature. I really appreciate that. But we're in the same position with the general public. They just don't want to see a fee.
Right.
When, you know, particularly with fishing, we're in serious straits across the board, whether it's Puget Sound or the Columbia River. But we're asking for more fees. So we really need to consider that as we move forward with this budget ask and how much we can ask from the public when they're getting less opportunity.
Before I go to Commissioner Baker, we have 45 minutes left in this meeting before we have to wrap it up. So I want you all to be aware of that. 3:45, we're done. Commissioner Baker.
Thank you, Vice Chair Carpenter. I'd like to make a point that part of what we've talked about many times today and lately has been our marketing and how we couch these problems and how we couch these solutions. And that marketing goes to both the people who are paying them, which in this case would be the sports people, and then the general public. Because when Commissioner Graybill was just speaking about the public and the public's adverse reaction, he was really talking about sports people. And one thing that I've really learned on the last year and a half on this commission is not only how much we do for sports people and that recreational ability and all of that, but how integral they are to us and what we have to do. We're talking about pumping millions of more fish out in the water from hatcheries, and we got to have people catching them. That's my point. We need to get that message across more, marketing, both to the general public and to the sports people, and have the sort of sad but hopefully temporary problem that we got to have some current money. And thank you very much for helping us do our job, but you're going to have to pay a little bit more. I'd like to just make my position that I don't think we should do a surcharge. I think that has a tougher road than the fee increase, especially though Raquel, you summed it up. I mean, we're charging more for nothing. And surcharges are just always bad over there. But then I wondered, when I was listening to Commissioner Caney's, the disparity between the fishers and the hunters increases, why do we have to charge each set the same percentage? Why couldn't we manage that disparity and have that be a selling point by the way of the bill, which is that we're charging hunters a little bit less of a percentage and fishers a little bit more, but it balances out in the end. And nobody can be over there banging on people saying they're not treating me fairly. So that would be my suggestion, but I definitely think a surcharge would be the wrong way to go.
Commissioner Thorburn.
I have a bunch of, I think, fairly small observations and questions. There's surveying that's being done, and as I recall, the last I saw, there seems to be more support for the surcharge among those surveyed. And I guess I'm talking mostly to hunters, because that's sort of what I'm hearing as well, more support for the surcharge. At the risk of, I already have the National Wild Turkey Federation upset with me, but we want to fix this small game license in Eastern Washington by adding 5 turkey tags to the small game license rather than just one. So more value to it. Then I also wanted to bring up this notion of the fee for non-reporting. Is that my understanding? We already do have a fee for non-reporting. My understanding of the history of that was to try and improve reporting. In fact, what's happened is it's turned out to be a revenue source. I don't think there's a lot of love for penalties. I would be not real supportive of increasing a penalty for non-reporting. I mean, what we want is our sportsmen to report and not make money off of not reporting. I'd be more interested in trying to figure out incentives to get reporting happening than penalizing and trying to make a little money off of it.
Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Thorburn, I have a slide with a preliminary results of the survey and actually have some updates. We have to submit the materials early.
Right.
And so we pulled the survey here on, or it's still online, but just pulled the data from August 7th. And we had 700 respondents. It bumped up a little bit. 77% of the respondents agreed that the department should be supported by state general fund, and they think that general taxes should actually contribute more. 42% of respondents said that they were very unlikely to support a fee increase, so that was down from the what's on your slide at 48. And then as far as the two options, it's pretty much a split right now.
Okay.
42% supported the across-the-board approach versus 44 that preferred the surcharge, and then there was a large category of other. So, and then 66% were saying, hey, if you don't pursue fees, then just be more aggressive on the state general fund. My words, not on the survey. So, and then your question about the reporting. So our current penalty is $10 if you fail to report your activity. So the next time you buy a license is when that $10 is assessed for the hunting tags as well as for Puget Sound crab. If someone were to buy their next year's license before the hunting reporting period deadline, then you basically circumvented that. And so what this this change does is it says that if you failed to report for that hunting season, whenever you go back and buy your hunting license, that $10 comes up.
Okay.
And in doing so, we're hoping that kind of closes a loophole and it does generate some revenue. When you look at some other states on their hunting reporting, I mean, it's such value. It's the most basic data to collect, and it's the most important data as wildlife managers we use to actually structure the hunting seasons and manage the population. Other states take that reporting issue very seriously. $50 penalty. You can't apply to special permits until you've reported, et cetera. So there's, we're actually pretty mild in our reporting requirements, and this just closes a loophole.
Thank you.
Mr. McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. And so in terms of sharing ideas as we sleep on this policy issue for the evening, on slide 38, the also categories are kind of important there. Let me just say future inflation fee-setting authority to the commission, I think, is a very positive one. I think when we get around to inflationary things being applied, and they're 2%, 2.3, 3.1, 1.9, that kind of little drift is things that the public is not going to go knock your door down about. And so I think that's a very much of a positive thing. Eliminating 2 and 3 stamp temporary licenses, I'd almost be afraid that the folks that come in from a Nebraska will say, well, I'm only buy one then. One day, I'll just go fishing once then instead of 2 or 3 days. And I don't know if that's very attractive to me as we enter the sleeping on it stage, so to speak. With regard to the options there, general fund money or more license money, I agree with some of the comments here that it's not the best environment right now for people to say, sure, I'll chip in on some more fishing stuff. That new Puget Sound RMP that's going to put handcuffs over all of us, I'm fine with that. Yeah, we just, Columbia River summer Chinook season just got closed. This Sunday is the last day of fishing out of Ilwaco, where I'm going after this meeting is over, and it closes there. And so I think it's a tough sell. In a hunting world, you know, I don't hear from a lot of people, but when I sit around on the Little League fence and hear people talking about things, they grumble a lot. And on the hunting side of things, you hear a lot about wolves. Whether or not wolves reduce the hunting season by half or not, I don't know about that. But the grumbling is out there. So as I sleep on it, I would be inclined to think more favorably for a general fund increase and a minor inflationary type increase. And gamble. I mean, there's risks in all this, but gamble on the fact that we're not entering a big recession right now. I don't know what the revenue forecasts are, but they ought to be pretty positive. If there's a time to take a chance and a risk, this is a lot better than 2007 to try to do that kind of a thing. So, that's my feelings as we go through it. And, you know, it is a little bit of a risk on the general fund on what to do about that. But I guess those are kind of my thoughts as we go through.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Kehoe.
Yeah, so, and just remind me, Nate, I think you touched on it. This the fee part of it was this something that you anticipated that the legislature would ask for as part of an increase? And so that's kind of why you're kicking this around. Is that right?
Mr. Vice Chair and Commissioner Kehoe, it was certainly anticipating that we would need to be, us and sports persons need to try to solve this budget problem and sports persons contributing. But also it was when we were really looking at the activities that were at risk or in the enhancements and trying to figure out what's the most appropriate fund source. And so, we've touched on a number of examples. The wildlife area example, well, that seems like that should be a state general fund rather than put that on the back of hunters and anglers. An opportunity that is, for instance, maintaining the pheasant production. Well, that seemed like that was a sports contribution versus the state general fund. So it was that kind of analysis, yeah, row by row, trying to figure out what's the appropriate color of money.
So, I mean, I'm not an expert on how the legislature works, but, I mean, I have a working knowledge. And I know, like, Commissioner Baker and probably others around the table are much more familiar. But what I am afraid of, too, is that this could be perceived as the wrong time. Is there ever a good time to ask for a fee increase? Probably not. But this could be a bad time. And what I would be afraid of is that, you know, we get people worked up into a fever opposing the fee increase, and then that at the same time kind of torpedoes the general fund increase. So, you know, there's no easy answer to this, obviously, but I think timing is critical, and the timing is not good for, Commissioner McIsaac references, for fishing increase, for recreational fee increases. So, I mean, I think that's something that we can, that we need to, Commissioner, sleep on, as you say, and maybe give some direction. But a tough issue.
If I may just weigh in on what my colleague just said. I have a very similar feeling. I think there's some very, very, very dark clouds out there over the recreational future, particularly around salmon right now with the things that are ongoing, and in particular, the unknown. There's so many unknowns out there. This RMP came out of nowhere. The commission didn't even really know about it. They got legs. Everything was off the record. Nobody really knew what was going on, and of course, now we have the issue with the southern resident killer whales. We know what's going on. It's real. But what's the end result going to be? What's the young fellow that works at Boeing with three young kids going to do that historically goes fishing, and now it's cost him $350 more to get a license than it did a few years ago for his family? I'm gravely concerned about it. I'm going to sleep on it. I'll let you know more tomorrow. Commissioner,
can I just ask a follow-up? Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I remember the commission got a presentation by the folks I guess it was an advisory group concerning the Discovery Pass, mm-hmm. and kind of one of the options that was seriously being considered was doing away with the Discovery Pass. And is that, are you hearing that might be on the table as well at this upcoming session?
Mr. Vice Chair, Commissioner Kehoe, I think it was last November, December is when the Ruckels House process came out with their report on how should operations and maintenance be funded on state recreation lands. And the recommendation that came out was that the Discover Pass should be dissolved and that the fees should come from an increase on license tabs. It came out really close to the ledge session. Of course, that was also a short session, not really appropriate to take on a big policy lift, such as extinguishing the Discover Pass and replacing it with license tabs. It's my understanding that in talking with DNR and Parks, no one's submitting that as agency request legislation. OFM has some further analysis that they were charged on doing by the legislature. They were provided a proviso to contract with Washington State University to look at simplifying fees and understanding what the financial impacts of that. That report will come out probably in October, November. Hopefully that will either make its way in the governor's budget or find a friendly legislator that could champion an alternative solution there. I do want to just mention, The dialogue and the commission's leaning in here on general fund is great. I don't think any of us are happy about pursuing a fee bill. It's when you're looking at the activities, and as I said, trying to align the color of money, and you're thinking about wildlife conflict or our wildlife areas or the hatcheries, and we're saying, gosh, we don't want to cut any of these. What's our best strategy? And so we brought you forward what we thought was our best strategy. But having the your all's horsepower behind, I think the thing is that when we leave here as a team on Saturday afternoon, and if it is going to be leaning on more of general fund, that's going to require a full court press. And yes, when we look at the numbers from the overall state budget context and state general fund, revenue forecasts are up, but so is the caseload. It costs a lot for the state to educate and medicate and incarcerate people. and that caseload just continues to climb. And there's a the forecast doesn't project a recession next biennium, but there might be one, two bienniums from now. And so I think that's the context, is my guess, is how certainly how OFM has directed agencies to say, hey, we recognize there's pent-up demand for general fund, but there might not be that much available. And so there's going to be a long line of agencies that have pretty significant general fund state requests, and we're going to need to be together and really mobilize with partners if we're going to have these cuts backfilled by general fund.
So. And chew on things a little bit, Nate.
Good.
Commissioner Keeney.
Yeah, I don't disagree with anything you just said, and yet I think some type of fee increase might be on the horizon, and if it is, it seems to me there should be a discussion or a thought process of price point. If the price of gas is $3.20 and it goes to $3.50 and you're at the pump, you didn't even notice it, because you got to get from point A to point B, and you got to pay for that. And that was $6 extra out of your pocket, but you'll do it no problem. If it goes from $3 or $3.20 to $4, you'll probably say, "Wow, maybe I'm going to avoid that trip." And that's what you're trying to get to, I think, is a price point that makes sense to people. And part of that making sense is opportunity days. I think you have to add opportunity days into the mix of fishing, hunting, multiple licenses. Because when I buy just a deer hunting license, it costs me X amount of dollars, and I've got, 12 days to go use it. And when I buy a fishing license, I have oftentimes 4 months to use it. And so people have a price point for that. You know, if it costs me 10 more dollars, but I get all this enjoyment out of it through the whole summer, versus somebody that says, shoot, 20 more dollars for 12 days of hunting? Heck with it, I'm going to go somewhere else. So, you know, use that, maybe analyze that a little bit for opportunity days. And then I would really recommend something that was said, I can't remember who said it, but when a family is to get priced out of it, you know, that's not what we want. So sometime, I think we heard about some type of an option for keeping that cost down for a family unit, I think would be wise too. And yet, I'm not opposed to saying, well, we might, as a group, push more for general fund than price increase, but I think you ought to have a price increase, something based on as much good information as you can gather, and don't forget about opportunity days and price point, because there's a point at which people go, it's just not worth it.
Well, if I may just take off of that just a little bit, I get concerned when I hear from stakeholders about these fee increases consistently. And the negative economics it would cause the department if a significant number of these people, families, individuals, drop out as customers of ours. I think that's one of the key things that we and department staff need to keep in mind. These are our customers. If we lose them, the cost to get the customers back again is huge.
Right.
It's huge. It's way more money to get them back. And we talk about getting youth involved. Well, it's a great thought, but it's not easy to do. And then if the parents say, oh, the heck with it, let's go golfing today instead of go fishing. And up in the north end where I live in Puget Sound is, there's this other country that's just across the border about 45 miles, and they like American money. And I-5 is full of boats going up and down there. So that whole participation level and tourism perspective could go to Canada or to Oregon, and that worries me greatly. So I'm done with that. Commissioner McKaysey.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. And in the spirit of trying to be as effective tomorrow afternoon as we can, I wondered if you could calculate a 5% increase, not a 12 or a 15, but a 5% increase. And that would just be conducive to a conversation about going light on something that could be characterized as cost of living and making up the balance in terms of general fund. Now, how much of a balance? We'll have to have the discussion tomorrow whether the number's 30 million, 28 million, 32 million, 35 million, or whatever it is. But I wonder if you could just do that just to help the conversation tomorrow.
Yes, Commissioner McIsaac, we'll bring back some different revenue tables for your all's consideration. And then certainly as the commissioners, I mean, what's on the table? Well, maybe I'll just go through the timeline and wrap up. So we're asking for approval of the second supplemental budget and the biennium budget and our agency request legislation and the long-term funding plan. Then in September, we'll submit all those materials to the governor and to the legislature. The House Appropriations Committee has a work session on our budget on scheduled for, it says here September 11th. I actually think it might be September 12th, so I apologize for the typo. In December, the governor's budget will come out, and then next session will run from January to through April, and then we'll start next biennium on July 1st. So I think tomorrow, you know, some of the decisions are, you know, which decision packages move forward. That could be part of your consideration. Are some of them adjusted upwards or some of them downwards? And then what color of money, what's that ratio? And I'll bring some a table of different fee amounts and what different percentages would yield. So with that,
if I may, we've got 15 minutes left for any additional questions, and then we've got a couple of folks from the audience that want to comment.
Okay.
Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. So I have questions about things that are not on here. One is I believe, I can't remember who made the presentation, but brought up the point that there is a lot of reporting requirements that the department has in legislation that is just kind of still on the books, costs a lot of time and effort for staff to comply. And I, as I recall, there was some thought about maybe, you know, having an omnibus bill kind of changing that. If you kind of putting that on the table for another day, is tabling that idea?
Commissioner Kehoe, we were looking at that as a bill idea and then thought, you know, we've got a pretty big lift next year, and that's a great fit for a supplemental year. Simple, right. Policy only, minimal fiscal impact. So we kind of pulled that back. If there's an interest in looking at it for next year, let us know. We're happy to put it back in front of you. But
yeah,
we've got our hands full. We've got a pretty big lift.
Yeah, I mean, I would defer to you. I think if it's if the agency feels that this would result in, you know, less report writing and more time in the field or doing things, I think that would be a good thing. But it's hard for us here at the table to calculate or to assess that. So
I think it's absolutely a need. We were looking at number of bills for next year. Back in 2017, we ended up with 7 bills that all had companions, and that on top of a big, you know, revenue lift was really tough to keep up with. And so
right.
We want to keep our bills right around 3 to 4, yes. Knowing that we've probably got 200 to 300 others that we're going to be tracking and heavily involved in, along with this $65 to $75 million budget ask. But let's work on that.
I completely
really
agree
for next
with,
year.
You know, with that assessment, it's like, you know, you don't want to you don't want to spread yourself too thin. So, and focus on the real key ones. And then, Mr. Vice Chair, one follow-up to a different item is it's come to my attention that there's potentially some, and I talked with Michelle Culver about this, you know, it's small potatoes, but it has to do with a potential change in the vessel designation for the Dungeness commercial coastal crab fishery. I talked with Michelle. Apparently there is a work or advisory group of the coastal Dungeness asking to maybe change some regs about pot limits, statutes about pot limits, and then also about vessel designation
And that there is a survey apparently that's underway and to be completed by mid-August. I expressed to Michelle my concerns about the timing of such a survey because, you know, the people I represent, many of whom do have that license, they're scratching away trying to make a living, not really, you know, responding to a survey is not big on their radar. So what Michelle told me is that, you know, based on the results, there may be agency legislation. I would just hope that that would come if there is such a legislation, that would come before the commission to review and comment on. That's my only, and I just wanted to raise that.
Absolutely, and that's the first I'm hearing of it. So just know that if we go forward with anything like that, it'll absolutely be in front of you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Grayville.
Came to my attention that surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, there's a lot of misunderstanding about how PILT rates are established and who has the responsibility of charging those. From what I understand, the counties actually establish the rates and the legislature approves them. It's not our responsibility. And we are getting blamed a lot for the lack of adequate payment in PILT. One question is, how do we better educate legislators that it is their responsibility and the counties that they need to find a common way to establish those rates? And then also, I've heard the concept of moving that responsibility from to Treasury. Now, which I really like, the idea of getting it out from under our auspices, and I would like to learn more about what is necessary or what's needed to take place to move that responsibility over there, because I would be eager to make that happen.
Okay. Commissioner Graybill, so PILT's, it's a long story here. I'll try to just make it really succinct. In statute, in our statutes, we're required to pay PILT, and PILT can be paid in one of three ways. Either 70 cents an acre, whatever rate we were paying on taxes back in 1984, or at open space open. And so the county, each county has the option of either collecting PILT from the department or collecting fines, fees, and forfeitures from Title 77 violations. Most counties in eastern Washington, where we have most of our land holdings, opt for PILT. So there was a report done a couple of years ago by the Department of Revenue and a number of stakeholders, and we were involved, that had a number of recommendations. And one recommendation was to separate this issue about where counties are choosing between PILT and fines, fees, and forfeitures. Number one, we want counties to prosecute Title 77 violations, so allow them to retain and cost recovery for those violations. We want them to participate in that, and we want to pay our payment in lieu of taxes. So that would be one step. The other is adjusting the rate, and it would be great, and we have in our maintenance level request anticipated, you know, where counties are going to move their rate to the open space open, because this is something that came out probably in 2007, 2008, as counties were going through their tax rolls and saying that, hey, we could actually go and charge the state at a higher level than what the state's been previously paying using one of the three methods. And so we had a number of counties come forward. Kittitas, Yakima, Chelan had come forward with pretty sizable bills. We paid those. We did not have general fund. We were backfilling with Pittman-Robertson dollars or any other funding we had because we had the tax bill. The legislature in about, I'd say, 2012-13 froze the PILT payment at the rate we were paying in 2009. That has continued onward. This current biennium, there was some adjustments of PILT, but it's still not the full PILT level. So that's something that we're hearing a lot of resistance on as we've gone forward with acquisitions, or just resistance on the department on, hey, you guys aren't paying your taxes. We want to pay our taxes. We just need a full appropriation amount. And so we've been working with a coalition of folks to try to secure that through legislative change. It's not part of agency request legislation, but there's a number of partners that will probably try to advance that bill.
Well, thank you for that explanation. That's important. But I, as I understand, DNR makes their payments directly for
Treasury.
Through Treasury. And what's the opportunity for us to move that direction?
Yeah, so the PILT Coalition actually has met a couple times this summer, and we are actually going with the coalition members and Representative Dent and Senator Warnock to meet with the state treasurer on the 27th, I think it is, or the 29th of August. We're going to see how they feel about that. We've had some resistance in the past, but we've got a new treasurer, hoping we have a new attitude towards that change and consistency in how they do the payments.
But either, I guess either way, if the funding's appropriated by the legislature to Treasurer or the funding's appropriated to WDFW, it's still the same dollar amount. We just want to be able to pay the bill.
I understand that it would get that monkey off our back.
Understood.
Which is important.
The other thing the PILT Coalition's working on, I'll keep this really quick, is having the counties get together and figure out their ideal model. And then they have some ownership over how it's calculated, what the rate is, and then they can provide that feedback to the coalition. The coalition can draft a bill that makes sense for the counties. So we're waiting for that feedback from them.
Okay, Joe Storr has a comment, and then we're going to move into open public comment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I was just, Raquel pretty much covered it. We did take a run at the treasurer at that option for payment of PILT about 4 or 5 years ago, and the treasurer was reluctant to do so at that point in time. So,
thank you. Nate, Raquel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sleep
Great
well.
Feedback. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we have two participants in the open public comment period. Both of you can come up at the same time. You know the rules, 3 minutes. Then Tammy ejects you on the ejection seat. Dennis DeSilvis and Lance Winneka. Dennis, take it away.
Hey, Vice Chair Carpenter, members of the Commission, Director Susswind, and Deputy Director Storr, good afternoon. I have some comment, a comment, but before I go on into that, I just wanted to relate to you something that happened to me this past weekend. I spent a whole bunch of time with some people over in Clay Elum at a big do. Anyway, I'm sitting at a table with 12 or a dozen or so other hunters. I'm not a hunter, but I'm sitting at a table at dinner, and what they were talking about for over an hour was exactly what Commissioner Keeney said: opportunity days versus the amount of money that they were paying. And it went on and on and on and on. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm, whoa, these guys are really adamant about what they're talking about here. So anyway, I just wanted to pass that on to you. Okay. One of the things is, though, during the past month, since June, when the budget, I heard this this thing with Nate and Raquel, during the past month, I've talked with members of several conservation organizations, and without exception, all the people that I've talked with support the total $60 million-plus budget for the operating budget for WDFW for this next biennium, the $60 million, not just the $30 that you guys are, that you're talking about there. They're talking about that extra $28 million that's in there for the enhancement also. Maybe I'm misinterpreting some of what I've heard here, but that's what they were really after. And this support will likely include correspondence with the governor and his staff to include the fully funded WDFW operating budget in the overall 2019-2020 state budget. What will happen, I don't know. But from a citizen standpoint, I'm hopeful that all this effort that these people that I've talked with goes forward. and help support WDFW. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Mr. Winneka.
Oh, yeah. My name is Lance Winneka. I work for the South Puget Sound Salmon Enhancement Group. We are a regional fisheries enhancement group. There's 14 groups across Washington State, and we work with private landowners developing salmon projects all across the state of Washington. I wanted to thank you for including us in your biennium budget, last biennium, and also including the RFG program in this budget request. We very much appreciate the $900,000 of funding to fund our program to do good work across the state. I do want to highlight that last biennium we did receive $641,000 from the RCO passed through the Department of Fish and Wildlife to help support our program for on-the-ground development of projects. We did meet with the RCO and Surf Board this morning when they were adopting their budget for the next biennium, and the $641,000 is not included in their funding package. So with the $900,000 that's approved in your budget, or that's proposed in your budget, there's still a significant cut of funding for the RFG programs that is not going to be moved forward in the RCO budget. We do understand there's conversations happening with the WDFW staff and RCO staff, and so potentially there's some ways to rectify the budget situation moving into the future. I am definitely not nuanced enough in the budget with state and capital funds to understand how to make the request work that does not impact the department's budget. But we do want to just acknowledge that Joe will be working with the RCO on how to better serve the RFG program or better fund the RFG program moving into the future. We also want to understand that there is we want to find a way to identify a sustainable funding approach for the RFG program where we don't have to rely on biennium support, each biennium to support us. So we're going to be working on ways to increase sustainable funding for the program. But again, we do appreciate the support of your commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and also the confidence that you have in our program to do good work across the state. So I just wanted to say thank you for funding us in the previous bienniums and all the support in the past, and also thank you very much for having the confidence to move forward with good work in this biennium. So thank you for that.
Question?
Yes, sir.
McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Thanks for the testimony. Just to make sure I understand what you've said there in your testimony, did you mention an RFG cut of $640,000? And if you were, what is that? And if
sure.
that was not funded, what would the consequences
okay.
be?
Yes. So the previous biennium, the Department of Fish and Wildlife supported the RFG program with a $900,000 general fund request. That, as I see, that's carried forward in this biennium from the Fish and Wildlife budget as well. In the previous biennium, $641,000 was approved by the Recreational Conservation Office that was passed through ultimately through the Department of Fish and Wildlife to fund RFG programs to develop on-the-ground projects capital dollars, yes, sir. So there was capital funds from RCO that directed the RFG program to spend them on the ground development for project development. And as I mentioned just previously, that they met this morning and they did not carry forward that $641,000 into this biennium. And so there will be a shortfall in the RFG budgets this coming year.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Hearing none, we will stand adjourned. The Fish Committee will start at 4:00.
Great, thank you.